welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. On this episode, we discuss US soccer's debut on HBO Max and Telemundo, our thoughts on how TV broadcasters are getting more access during Premier League matches, your opinions about MLS Season Pass news so far, plus we have letters from you in our mailbag segment. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer. I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, we will definitely talk about the U.S. Women's National Team debut on HBO Max and Telemundo and Peacock shortly. But I'm pretty sure you caught this. But from this past weekend of Premier League coverage on NBC Sports, there were a couple of interesting developments, and that's in regards to player access, which in the past has been very little, especially with the Premier League or English football in general. However, we did see some glimpses of how things are improving, in quotation marks, in that area. What did you see, first of all, for anyone who missed it? But also, what's your thoughts about it?
Yeah, I have to say, I guess for those who follow me on Twitter, they saw I was uncomfortable with the Norgard interview at halftime of the Brentford match. And it's not that I'm uncomfortable with it per se. It's just that it's strange to me, right? I know in American sports they do it. It's very commonplace for broadcasters to talk to a coach. The one American sport I still watch regularly is ACC college basketball. And yes, they talk to the coaches at halftime on the way into the locker room.
But Kartik, just to mention, just to throw this in though too. So this was a player walking off the pitch right after the halftime whistle, on his way to the dressing room, changing room, locker room, whatever you call
right.
it. BT Sport, microphone in hand. Hey, what do you think of that first half? How did it go so far?
Yeah, and I think it was obviously planned to be Norgard because he's the captain or was wearing the armband at Brentford in this match. So I assume he expected it. It was planned, but it still was, to me, kind of uncomfortable. And it's something I guess we'll get used to. We don't even really have pitch side or what they would call sideline reporters in the U.S. that often at football matches in the U.K. We've had them in the past, but not regularly. So that was odd. So I think I'll get used to it, but it was just still something that that hit me like a brick. And then the Kepa interview that NBC was able to conduct after the Chelsea Crystal Palace match, that's another positive development. We've seen a few of these now. We saw Kevin De Bruyne interviewed after, I forget which Manchester City match, but after the World Cup break, one of the matches during the festive period, with an NBC Mike Flagg on a mic doing a live interview with the studio in Stamford. So that's very positive. I really like that. I applaud NBC and Sky for being able to bring that to us, and I'm sure Sky is helping facilitate it on the UK end. So I think that's a positive thing. And another thing I noticed this past weekend in NBC's coverage of the Premier League was I think that there was more emphasis, and they've done this a lot in the past, right? When Arlo White was the lead commentator. But I do think that there was more emphasis in both the pregame and the post-match shows of talking to Peter and Lee, or Peter and Graham, whichever combo it was, and really kind of digging deeper into the match at hand. So, and maybe it's more insightful now because it's Peter Drury rather than Arlo White. Maybe that's why I flagged it this weekend as a very positive thing from NBC. But I think that they're really making some major improvements with their coverage. Again, the Norgard interview and the halftime interviews, something that I'm not comfortable with, but I think most of the viewers probably enjoy.
The other thing we saw too in that Brentford match was a kind of a live footage of inside the changing room, inside the dressing room at Brentford. You could see Thomas Frank giving his pre-match team talk, and players still in their training gear getting ready to change into the first team uniforms or first team kits. And that's something too that we've seen bits and pieces of this in the past in very small amounts. So there are certain things, certain aspects of the greater access that I do like. I'm with you, Kartik, in terms of the kind of the sideline reporter. The basically at halftime, whether it's coming off the field or on the field, I don't like for the most part, because it is a sacred space. Yes, but also it's one of those things where it's very rare that you'll ever get any insightful thoughts or analysis or viewpoints. Very, very rare. So I think it's a waste of time. I mean, I'd rather them go back in the tunnel, do their thing, come out and play the game. And then, like you said, too, in terms of having Peter Drury and Graeme Lasseau going to them on camera, either right after the match at Old Trafford, getting their thoughts about the offside non-decision, basically. I think it's good because, I mean, oftentimes, too, Graeme and Peter have been in the game for so long. They're experts. They have some really good opinions and thoughts, and they're at the match. They're right there in the stadium. They can give us that viewpoints. So yeah, I like how things are going with this Premier League season, both on the pitch and off the pitch. I mean, to me, it really is absorbing. Yes, we do have the Bundesliga starting again this weekend on Friday, with a game that's going to be on ESPN2 as well as ESPN+. I'm looking forward to that too, but. Yeah, and you look at this Premier League weekend and you got, what, Liverpool against Chelsea on the Saturday morning 7:30 kickoff game on Peacock, with Mudryk probably getting some playing time in this match. So, yeah, there's a lot going on in the Premier League for sure. We could do a whole podcast on that. So let's move the shift to the coverage of the U.S. men's national team and U.S. women's national team. This is the start of a brand new right cycle. Previously, as many of our listeners would know, is that the rights to the U.S. men's and women's national team games were combined with Major League Soccer into one package. Those have now been separated. So MLS is on its own, and it signed its deal with Apple and got the TV deal with Fox. And then on the U.S. men's national team and women's national team side of things, they've gone on their own and signed a deal with Warner Brothers Discovery on the English language side. And then at the 11th hour, within 12 hours of kickoff, U.S. Soccer announces a deal with Telemundo Deportes. Those games on Telemundo Deportes are going to be either on Telemundo or Universo, but every single game will be in Spanish on Peacock. So we saw on Tuesday night our first glimpses of coverage for both Telemundo and for Turner, Warner Brothers Discovery, and the game being on HBO Max. Kartik, what was your thoughts of the U.S. women's national team's performance on the pitch, but also in terms of what you saw from both the coverage on HBO Max and on Telemundo and or Peacock? It's the same coverage, but wherever you watched it.
Yeah, in terms of the performance on the pitch, the first half was pretty poor. Honestly, New Zealand, as we've seen in previous matchups between these two sides, not the sternest test, although this, I believe, is the first time the U.S. has traveled to New Zealand to face them, of course, with the World Cup, them co-hosting the World Cup this summer. So the performance, I'm not that bothered by one way or another. The U.S. obviously has not been playing well towards the tail end of 2022, so I guess getting a 4-0 win, however difficult or labored it might have been in the first half, is positive. So in terms of the coverage, a couple points. Let's start with Telemundo on the Spanish side, Telemundo and Peacock and Universo. Andres Cantor calling U.S. women's national team's games is amazing. It just is. There's no other way to express that. And I think it's really, from a credibility standpoint, something that Univision, who were the previous rights holders through that bundle with Soccer United Marketing and MLS, they were not able to provide that. And I don't think they necessarily provided the sort of serious coverage. It was almost just obligatory coverage from them, right? So the Telemundo, big upgrade. And then also the halftime, I thought, was very well done out of their Miami studios, except it was all about the men's team. So that might have been a canned segment. Yunus Musa, nice feature on him, a nice little discussion about the men's team. So that was good. But I think with Telemundo, the thing we found is that they cover major tournaments and they cover the Premier League, and they're part of NBC Universal. So the production is always crisp, the graphics are good, and the commentary is at a high level. So this is great for U.S. soccer, in my opinion, the deal with NBC Universal on the Spanish language side. Let's shift to HBO Max on the English language side. I know there's a lot of criticism of Julie Foudy among some women's soccer fans, saying she's kind of out of touch with what's going on in NWSL. She's out of touch with some of the developments even within the U.S. Player pool. But I still think she's the best in the business in providing analysis. Maybe Ali Wagner is a co-number one, but I still think she's there one A or one B because she knows the other sides. She does the proper preparation. So we learned a lot about New Zealand during the match from her, and there's a willingness to be critical of the play of the U.S. that I think maybe some other commentators don't have. So I think that was a good choice. And then their studio, if you didn't see it post-game, Chris, I know you saw it as well, so I'm sure you have some comments on this. HBO and Turner going right into an area where previous rights holders were kind of hesitant about. I mean, Fox was hesitant in wraparound coverage of games to be critical. ESPN would have the criticisms from members of their team. I think Max Brados was really good as a host, but once he left, I saw a little bit of drop off in that. And then obviously Casey Keller always critical in the studio, but DeMarcus Beasley not only gave some really good pointed criticisms of the men's situation, the Berhalter Arena situation. I don't necessarily agree with everything he said, but I'm glad he's putting it out there. I'm glad we're having the conversation. And the other thing I found interesting, Chris, and interested in your take on this, Luke Weilman is obviously the host, but then DeMarcus Beasley began to kind of facilitate the discussion and ask others on the panel, right, who were former women's national team players, about their experiences as professionals and what happened when this sort of thing happens in a dressing room and blows up. So I thought it was outstanding.
Yeah, on that point specifically about DeMarcus Beasley discussing and actually turning it to Shannon Box and Julie Foudy and saying like, hey, and from his own personal experience saying like, hey, what's happened to you guys when there's been a possibility of a coaching change? Has U.S. soccer come to you to ask you for your opinions? I mean, it felt a little bit rehearsed, the question. I mean, I'm sure during kind of rehearsals for coverage, they probably talked about it and said, okay, hey, what if we ask this question? However, you mean whether it was rehearsed or not, it was a great question. And it did bring some light to what it's like to be within that camp, to be a U.S. men's or women's team player, and a coaching question comes up, and them being asked what's their thoughts about it. You mean is you know, how's it going? Do you think that you're achieving the best that you can under the current coach? Whatever the questions are, that was really good. Overall, I thought the production was really smooth. I thought it was a kind of really good actual broadcast. Really nothing to criticize it about. I mean, it was smooth. It was they didn't try to overcomplicate it. As we've seen with Turner in the past when they had the UEFA Champions League, where they did the two studios and they had even a completely different take on how to cover soccer. This was by the book, and I thought Luke Weilman was good. Julie Foudy, to me, is one of the best co-commentators in the women's business. I think you can't go wrong when you have her. She knows her stuff. She's very professional. It was all good. It was all good. And I think in terms of the discussion about Greg Berhalter and whether he should go, into Marcus leading off saying like, hey, beforehand I was in the Berhalter camp, but after everything that's happened, I really feel that I don't think we can go on with Greg Berhalter. The only part of that I would say in terms of some critical analysis on that is that, to me, I think in many ways – I would have liked to have seen the conversation move on a little bit in terms of everyone saying, okay, pretty short and succinctly, yes, it's unlikely that Berhalter is going to have his contract renewed. It's time to move on. So now what type of coach are we looking at? Who would be a best fit for this type of position? Not the individual per se, but what type of coach are we looking for? But overall, very impressed from the first broadcast.
Yeah, one other thing I should point out is I think in terms of, and maybe again, it's a first game, and we start to see, we start to make critiques as we go on. Luke Weilman, who I've liked in the past with TSN, and I lauded the hiring by Turner of him. I think he was really solid for a match that it needed some life from the commentator in that first half. I think he, in addition to my previous comments praising Foudy, I thought he was really good, and he got us through that first half. Second half, a lot of the action spoke for itself, but that's the mark of a good commentator.
And I guess too, we'll have to wait and see what happens next week, because we've got the actual second game of this New Zealand against US women's national team friendly on January 20th. So what will they talk about then? And then next week we have the US men's national team friendly against Serbia. So there's quite a lot of opportunities here for US soccer, well, for Warner Brothers Discovery to kind of dig deeper into this topic. But I do like that they started off by being critical and talking about something that's a little bit uncomfortable in terms of the coaching situation. But Kartik, though, do you really feel that if Fox had the rights that they would have completely ignored this topic?
I don't think they would have had as candid a discussion. Now, would they have completely have ignored it? I don't know. I mean, I could see, Alexi Lalas has talked about it extensively on his podcast, which is distributed by Fox, by the way. But there's always a disconnect between that podcast, Chris, and what they say on air. So that's why I like Alexi's podcast more than I like his work in the studio, to be honest with you, because his podcast is very good.
I could see Rob Stone like kind of turning to Alexi saying like, hey, what's your thoughts about the current situation? And he would talk around in circles and be like, yeah, USA needs to do better. We need be the best in the world, but without actually zeroing in on what the actual issue is and whether or not he feels that Berhalter should stay or go. Yeah, but I think they would cover it, but they would definitely cover it in a different way, and then break for a commercial, and off they go, right? and then the game comes back.
Yeah, and in terms of ESPN, of the harder hitting coverage since, and again, I think it has to do with a lot of studio, et cetera. Max Brados was very good as a studio host for U.S. games. He then moved on. We'll see him on Apple this season, by the way. He's one of the commentators, as we talked about. But since Max moved on, I think to get that critical conversation, you have to watch the Football America show with Seb Salazar and Herc Gomez, which is not connected to the match coverage or the previous match coverage of U.S. soccer on ESPN. Obviously, they don't have the rights anymore. So I actually think ESPN probably would not have done as well with the topic during the match coverage. Obviously, the next day on Football Americas, they would have knocked it out of the park, as they continue to do. But so in terms of actual match coverage, I think this was really good to have this part of the studio.
I think the other thing about this, though, too, is that Peacock is a winner here, because now picking up the rights, the Spanish language rights to these games, prior to this match kicking off, I think a lot of people were looking at, okay, do I sign up for HBO Max for, what, $15 or $16 a month? But now with Peacock being in, it's in Spanish, but still for $5 a month, you get the Premier League games in English, of course, and in Spanish, some of them in Spanish. You now get most of the U.S. men's national team and U.S. women's national team games in Spanish. You get the Women's World Cup in Spanish, and you get the 2026 World Cup in Spanish, too. So if Spanish language isn't a barrier for you, this is a cost-effective way to watch a ton of soccer. And it expands, really, kind of that Peacock. One of the biggest criticisms about Peacock from soccer fans is it's only got the Premier League and that's it. Well, now we've seen in terms of the success that Peacock had during the World Cup, attracting a lot of English language listeners and viewers to watching the games in Spanish. Plus, with Peacock doing well on the Premier League side, I think Peacock's a winner in this one. And HBO Max, we don't know, right? HBO Max is going to be a temporary streaming solution. Then it's going to be changed to Max. And then at that time, I mean, it'll probably have some games still, but a lot of the games will be on TNT. But for me personally, as a cord cutter and as a soccer fan, going to HBO Max and watching the game didn't feel that weird. I thought it would, because I thought, okay, there's, I mean, you got Batman, you've got Succession, you've got The Last of Us, you've got all these different shows and movies and series on HBO Max, but going into it and then clicking on U.S. Women's National Team against New Zealand felt completely natural.
So here's the thing again. I agree with that, and it was very odd because I mean, HBO Max is actually my favorite streaming service of the I tend to watch YouTube more than any streaming service now, but of the, you know, the Netflixes, the Amazon Primes, etc. But I thought, okay, I'm going to have to get into the app and search. I didn't. It popped right up for me. It was popped on the first page because it was the only live event they were showing. Peacock, much like it is for the Premier League matches for me, I had to search. Now, at the same time, it's like I'm used to that with Peacock. I'm used to going into Peacock, seeing whatever movie or NBC show offering they have at the top, and then just hitting the search button saying, okay, I want to see Crystal Palace and versus Brentford, and then it popping up. So I just had to type in USW, not even NT, on Peacock, and it popped up. So not that bad, but I was impressed. HBO Max, it was, you didn't even have to search.
And then looking at this weekend's games, Kartik, we've already mentioned a little bit about the Bundesliga, of course, the Premier League too, but I think you have an interest in the French Cup.
Yeah, so the French Cup is going to be on Fox Deportes and on FS2 this weekend. I will admit, as we record this on Wednesday, I have not checked Fox's program guide to see which matches are where, but I do know I've been reliably informed that there will be at least one match on FS2 and multiple matches on Fox Deportes. So that means that people who don't have BN but have cable and have Fox Deportes, if you have the Spanish language package, and then FS2, I think, is in 50, 60 million homes in cable, you do have a chance to watch French football, which is something you don't get to see outside of European competition, right, when they're on CBS because of the BN situation currently. And again, I, as someone who would like to see the French league more often, I have BN, but I just know that it's you can't even have the conversations about Liga. I even see people now in the U.S., and it bothers me, Chris, but I have seen multiple times in the last 6 months people refer to the top European leagues as the four top European leagues instead of the five. And I think that's a and those are Americans. I think that's a reflection of BN. So I'm pleased that Fox is showing some of these matches this weekend.
Yeah, just a couple of things about this one, too, is that one is that we've got the schedule at worldsoccertalk.com for Coupe de France, as well as every other league and competition. And a lot of the games actually are on Fox Soccer Plus this weekend, too. So there's a combination of Fox Soccer Plus for some of the games, Fox Deportes for some of them, and then FS2 has a small number, too. The strange thing about this, Kartik, is that when we announced this deal, well, probably about 3 weeks ago, and broke the news that Fox was going to be showing Coupe de France games instead of BN Sports, and we printed the schedule, we talked about the news. However, the strange thing is if you go into BN Sports, whenever any of these Coupe de France games are on, you will find the games, some of those Coupe de France games, on BN Sports Connect. However, if you watch it on BN Sports Connect, the same game that's being shown on Fox Soccer Plus or FS2, whatever channel it is, on BN Sports Connect, it will have the Fox Soccer Plus logo on it. So obviously, BN Sports has the rights to the French Cup. They have the exclusive rights to the French Cup in Canada. They must have decided between Fox and BN Sports. BN Sports must have sold the rights to Fox to have them go ahead and show it on FS2 and at Fox Soccer Plus, etc. For a fee. Who knows how much that fee is. the hard part is BeIN Sports and Fox Sports, both of them are not very open to talking to the media and press to divulge information like this. So we kind of have to kind of hunt and peck and try to find out from our sources what's going on. But it's just weird that some of these games are still on BeIN Sports Connect with the Fox Soccer Plus logo on it. That's just really strange.
And I was not aware of that. So, again, it's because we reported on the deal 2 weeks ago or whenever that I knew about this. And then I talked to someone privately at Fox who told me, matches will be on these channels. But I did not know about the BeIN angle, which means that I guess you could watch BeIN Sports Connect. Anyone can watch that, and that cannibalizes the audience for Fox.
Yeah, the French League, we talked a little bit about this on the podcast, and also we have a new kind of weekly reader mailbag segment on the website in written form, answering your questions in addition to the listener mailbag. But a couple of times the last few weeks, we've had the topic of Ligue 1 come up. Talking about whether or not the French League should renew its rights with BeIN Sports. Discussions will happen at this year at some point. The rights end, I believe it's the end of the 23-24 season. So next year, about 12 months from now. I think the French League is really stuck, Kartik. I don't foresee it anytime soon. You mean kind of beating Serie A or Bundesliga? I just don't see how it's even possible for that league to be popular, to grow in the United States, just because there's so much competition on at the same exact time. PSG is the only way for that league to really flourish, and there is interest in PSG for sure. I mean, for obvious reasons, but when you have a team that's bigger than the league. Which is the same thing with Bayern Munich. I would argue that Bayern Munich is bigger than the Bundesliga. It's tough. How do you survive? What would you do if you're the French league? Would you renew with BeIN Sports or would you go someplace else?
I wouldn't renew with BeIN Sports, but I think we know the issue, which is PSG's got the same ownership as BeIN Sports, and you just said they're bigger than the league, right? So that's ultimately why all these international deals have been done with BeIN. The domestic TV deal collapsed a couple of years ago. I don't want to get back into that, but then BeIN was there at the end again with that for a period. So I think it's a major problem. I do think the French League is actually, if you dig into it, probably more competitive than the Bundesliga, as much of a proponent of the Bundesliga as I am. And it's arguably more compelling than Serie A, because I think there are more exciting young players that are coming out of that league. There's more tactical variation. There's more so-called big teams being beaten by smaller sides. Lens is right now in second, just a few points behind PSG, right? We saw Lille win another kind of provincial club win the league a few years ago. But all of those stories aren't being told because they're on BeIN, or they're not being told to a mass audience. And there's no solution in sight if they stay on BeIN. I mean, we can talk about this, Chris, if they get off BeIN. And it's a more dire situation than the La Liga was in when we had this conversation. It felt like weekly on the podcast in 2018 and 2019. The thing being, the La Liga officials, we knew, and now it's obviously been out in the open, they knew they had a problem, right? I'm not sure if the French League officials know that. I don't know if they understand that they've lost a massive opportunity to make a move in the U.S. market, especially at a time when I think, even though you mentioned the Bundesliga and Serie A are ahead of Liga, I think they've stagnated in interest, right? I just don't think there's that much interest in either of those two leagues. And I know this is someone who tries to promote the Bundesliga, that even some of the people who may have five, 6 years ago responded to me are like, it's terrible. It's a one-team league and all the teams. The other critique I'm getting about the Bundesliga isn't just that Bayern wins every year, but now that every German club effectively plays the same way tactically, which is kind of true. So there was a huge opportunity they blew. There was also an opportunity, quite honestly, before La Liga got off BN, if they had gotten off BN in that period and had maybe a year or two in on a more mainstream platform while La Liga was struggling on BN. But I think they missed the boat.
Yeah, big time. And I have to laugh, too, because whenever any like French Ligue 1 officials are interviewed by U.S. publications, they often talk about, like, well, yeah, we need to get off BN Sports and because we want to be competitive and compete with the Premier League. Well, the Premier League is so far, I mean, light years ahead of where the French League is in terms of popularity. I mean, they shouldn't even enter the same conversation. However, I would say the French League is great. I love the French League. I watched last weekend, I watched Rennes beat PSG. I mean, I like that the French has, I mean, in terms of the crowds and the atmosphere and the games, no complaints. I mean, my issue more so is that I think in many ways, in a perfect scenario, Ligue 1 moves to a streaming platform. However, if you move to ESPN Plus, which would be fantastic, you're then competing for airtime against La Liga and the Bundesliga. You can imagine ESPN FC each night, right, would lead off talking about La Liga, would talk about the Bundesliga.
And quite frankly,
and then get to Liga.
I initially said 3 years ago when the deal was made for the Bundesliga to go to, it was in 2019, right? And then it started in 2020, to leave Fox and go to ESPN Plus, that I thought it was a bad deal. I then reversed myself after 1 year on ESPN Plus. Now, 3 years in, I'm going to say I wish the Bundesliga was still on Fox, because I think that there was a lot of coverage you got year one when La Liga wasn't there, and now it's been buried. So that's the problem for the French League, as you
all right,
correctly articulated.
So the French League, if it goes to ESPN Plus, I mean, yes, those games would be shown, but then they're not going to get a lot of limelight on ESPN Plus, especially with all the other leagues going on and all the rights that they have. They could go to Paramount Plus, but Paramount Plus has Serie A, which is in direct competition with Ligue 1. They're not going to get as much time or effort or love from Paramount Plus because of Serie A. Ligue 1 could go to Peacock. No chance, right? Because of Premier League.
I don't know, and I'd love to talk to someone from ESPN about this, or maybe I just don't know the algorithm on YouTube and it's my fault. Paramount Plus shoves the Serie A highlight clips in my face on when I log on to YouTube, which is great. So the games I've missed, I can watch the clips from. The extended highlights. I never see this for La Liga or Bundesliga. I know ESPN's doing it, but I don't know if Paramount Plus has figured out the algorithm better. Now, if they have, then that's a potential solution for Liga, because at least you get higher up on that. Or maybe it's just my personal algorithm. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the YouTube algorithm. So I love YouTube also. So YouTube will definitely, you watch whatever you watch, it will continue recommending similar things to that. So for example, if for like 2 weeks you stop watching La Liga highlights, it's probably not gonna, even if you subscribe to that channel, it's probably not gonna actually recommend it to you. So it's almost like going down a rabbit hole. Once you go down a path on YouTube and you're showing interest in watching videos, it'll keep on recommending similar things to that.
Because when I log on right now, Chris, the first thing that would pop up would be some Serie A highlights package.
Yeah.
So maybe it's my fault.
That's YouTube.
Maybe I need to be watching more La Liga highlights to even it out.
Yeah. You almost have to train YouTube to kind of tell it what you're watching and then watch it, and then they'll keep on showing more of that. So I think the French League, I mean, like, so I said Peacock, I said Paramount Plus, I said ESPN Plus, Apple, I don't think so. I mean, so it really has nowhere to go. I mean, so it either stays on BN Sports, which is not perfect by any means, or it gets added to a streaming service that just gets lost. And I think the French League has made some major mistakes and has missed a massive opportunity. And I just don't see it growing at all, even though I have a lot of respect for the league itself. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. We're going to talk about MLS Season Pass. We talked about it last week in some detail. We're expecting some more news on the next podcast about it. But here's what Martin Mulcahy says. Fantastic podcast as usual. When talking about edgy and compelling commentators such as Roy Keane to bring onto MLS season pass, my mind immediately went to Eric Winalda, but then remembered you were talking about Major League Soccer. Although we would think Apple as an entity has the self-confidence for such a hire. So yeah, I think it's not Apple that's driving the talent hires, it's Major League Soccer. So one of the reasons, and we've talked about this in the podcast before, but one of the reasons that MLS wanted a centralized production is so that they can control the message, so that they can hire the talent, they can go ahead and have a consistent message across the league. And it's not looking for people that are going to give really good critical analysis that's going to make Major League Soccer a player or a team look inferior. I think it's going to be more safe. I think it's conservative. It's going to be, yes, you're providing analysis, but you're not ripping a team apart. Eric Winalda, I mean, fantastic coach, fantastic analysis. Would, if given the opportunity, would probably rip a team apart and say, like, this coach needs to go. We need somebody in there that's going to be the right coach for this team. And Eric's not a good fit for where Major League Soccer is going. And I don't think it has anything to do with Apple. It's just MLS will want to hire within its circle. Chris says, when it comes to the price of MLS season pass, I think $99 a season is too much, especially for the MLS fan that watches sporadically. In my view, what Apple should have done is offer season pass for free to Apple TV Plus subscribers, and then $4.99 a month for non-subscribers, which is an affordable price point for many fans and is comparable to competitors like Peacock and Paramount Plus. The price point of MLS season pass will have an effect on Apple's long-term interest in Major League Soccer, because if the number of season pass subscribers declines in the first few years of this deal, we might see Apple lose interest in supporting MLS. That is my biggest fear about this deal. Lastly, the other fear I have about this deal is that once the current Bundesliga or Serie A rights deals end in the next few years, Apple might become more interested in that instead.
Yeah, I think that that's possible with the Bundesliga, because the price point, what ESPN paid, was so low that I can see Apple putting more money in front of the Bundesliga and then falling in love with the idea in the U.S. market. In terms of Serie A, they got a pretty good rights fee from CBS, and all of the indications I have, and they're about midway through their deal now, is that they're happy with it. Now, I don't know that they would want to pay more than they paid for this three-year rights cycle, but I feel pretty comfortable Serie A will stay on either CBS or go back to ESPN. But the Bundesliga, it's a real possibility, yeah.
When you think about it, Kartik, MLS Season Pass is going to be the most expensive streaming option for soccer fans in the United States, right? So for $10 a month for ESPN Plus, you get La Liga, all the games from La Liga, all the games from the Bundesliga, you get FA Cup, League Cup, maybe USL.
Yeah, you get every USL game, actually.
Right, so you get a ton of soccer for $10 a month. You look at Paramount Plus, you get almost every single Serie A game for, what's it, $5 a month. You look at Peacock, you get half, basically about 180 exclusive Premier League games a season for $5 a month. So you add those three together. You add ESPN Plus, Paramount Plus, and Peacock together, and that equals roughly about $15, which is the price that MLS season pass is. So you have to be, it's hard, right? Because if you're a hardcore soccer fan, a hardcore Major League Soccer fan, you're probably a season ticket holder. If you're a season ticket holder, you will get MLS season pass for free. Free in quotation marks. I mean, you're paying for it through your season ticket price, but you're getting it for free. So then what about the rest of the audience? The rest of the audience are maybe more casual MLS fans or are interested in MLS. It's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy by any means. I really think that Apple needs to, which I'm sure they will, make a huge push on the marketing side. However, I think MLS needs to sign players. I think they need to sign some big players to get those casual fans saying that, okay, yeah, $15 a month, it's worth it to see XYZ players now in Major League Soccer. That I think to me that's the key element in this.
Yeah, I think the other aspect of this is that some of those casual MLS fans you talk about would have stumbled across an MLS game on ESPN Plus the last few seasons when they're poking around the platform looking for a La Liga match or a Bundesliga match or previously a Serie A match before they moved to CBS. So they lose that now. You effectively lose that audience. And I think the other problem here potentially is that there's been so much conversation about the price point. And I was actually really surprised to Chris's point, right? I was really surprised by the $13 for Apple Plus, Apple TV Plus subscribers. I thought, okay, maybe it's going to be $15 a month and $100 a year, $99 a year for non-Apple TV Plus subscribers. But once you're in the Apple ecosystem, I thought there would be some sort of break in price. Now, the break in price is very minimal. So, in fact, if you combine your Apple TV Plus subscription, what you're paying for that, with the MLS Season Pass subscription, you're paying over the course of the season substantially more.
Yeah, I think the other part of this, too, is that Apple iPhone users are more affluent than Android users. And I think MLS and Apple, really, more so Apple, are banking on Apple. I mean, such a huge amount of phones in this country. People with disposable income, they're banking on these people saying, like, you know what? Yeah, I'm willing to subscribe. Maybe I'm getting Apple TV Plus for free, right? Sometimes you get the, 3 months free, 6 months free with the phone. Yeah, I'm willing to pay $12-$13 a month just to get those MLS games. However, that is that's a big leap, right? It's not going to be a guarantee. I think the other part of this too, Kartik, which we didn't even talk about, is that there needs to be more. There needs to be other reasons why you subscribe to MLS Season Pass. And yes, they have all the video coverage of the league specifics, but in the UK, there was a report that this past weekend that the Daily Mail was saying that Apple is interested in the Premier League rights in the UK when they come up for bids, discussions later this year. And Apple is trying to possibly try to kind of break through that Sky Sports, BT Sport, Amazon monopoly. However, even if Apple did get the rights to the Premier League, that's only the UK. And even if Apple did get the rights to the Premier League in the United States, that wouldn't be until, what, about 2028, roughly. That's a long time from now. So, and even if Apple did say they did get the rights to the Premier League, which is doubtful, but if they did get the rights to the Premier League in the US, that would be a separate subscription fee than what MLS Season Pass is, because MLS Season Pass is all in itself. You're not going to get shows and movies with it.
And here's something. They have a chance to break the Sky monopoly, which with BT and Amazon as other rights holders in the UK. The Premier League is much more conscientious of the fact that they need to stay in some sort of mainstream platform in emerging markets. So they've done that in Asia. They've done that in the United States. They've done that to a large extent in Latin America, right? And they've stuck with NBC here. In spite of the fact that they could have gotten more money elsewhere. They won't make that mistake, I think, in this market. And that, again, speaks to why MLS made a global deal with Apple when now they're in the same position in every other territory. I mean, they were on Eurosport, which is owned by Discovery, at one point in many European countries. They were on Sky Sports in the UK, right? So now they're limiting. It's not just a U.S. problem. They're limiting themselves across the globe. Their television ratings on TSN, I know we tend to critique MLS TV ratings in the U.S. on this program. Their television ratings on TSN were pretty good, actually, believe it or not, in Canada. So I think they may long-term have done a lot of damage to themselves. And you mentioned the Premier League. I don't think this is something the Premier League would do.
unless it was just, multi billions of dollars. And if it was the end of TV as we know it in terms of the satellite and cable industries, and we're not there yet. You mean, and even a couple of years from now, I don't think we're there yet. There's still going to be a lot of people subscribe to TV via cable or satellite. But yeah, you mentioned before too, in terms of in the past, people watching MLS games and ESPN Plus and then getting hooked, at least they have the Fox deal still in place. So roughly one game a week, and they can watch a game on Fox and then get hooked that way.
And one other thing about the additional content. So Peacock shows only, I think the number I've calculated it this year, or maybe it was you that one of us calculated it, was only, it's 44% of their matches this season that are live on Peacock. The rest are on some sort of linear platform, USA, NBC, whatever else. But they give you that 24/7 Premier League channel, and you get to see shows like Kelly and Wrighty, which is Kelly Cates and Ian Wright, and these Premier League programs that build the context around the league. I think Apple, to make this work, has to have a constant channel with original programming and some edgy MLS programming, not the kind of stuff, video stuff we see MLS put out, which is very kind, normally very propaganda-ish. I mean, truthfully, MLS's written material on their website is much better, I think, than their video material. I like some of their written material. I think it's edgier. So to make it work, they kind of have to do that. It's not just the additional video content. I think they have to have a full-fledged MLS TV channel on there, which it brings in some other opinions, which is where someone like an Eric Winalda would fit in. But they're not going to do it, I don't think.
Yeah, MLS has a huge mountain to climb for MLS Season Pass, and it may succeed. I mean, a couple of years from now, Kartik, you and I might be saying, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we were, not that we were wrong, but that we doubted Major League Soccer, we doubted Apple. It's a risk. Yeah, it's a gamble.
Yeah, quite frankly, I'll be honest. I'll do a mea culpa here. You and I both bashed the NBC Sports Gold thing and the Peacock thing, or had questions about when it went to Peacock. But when NBC Sports Gold started, there was a lot of outrage about it. I'm now like very comfortable seeing that money leave my bank account because I feel like I'm getting full value on Peacock for what I'm paying for, which.
Right. Well, that's the key.
Yeah.
That's the key, though. There's $5 a month, right? So for that, I can see huge value. If it was $15 a month, that might be a different story. So, yeah, to me, it all comes down to pricing. I mean, and product. I mean, is Major League Soccer going to sign some major players this season? We will have to wait and see. All right. Next up is Dave. Dave says, maybe I misheard, but did you say Hispanic audiences under-index in streaming? Data I have seen is the opposite, with Hispanic audiences significantly over-indexed in streaming and under-indexed in cable. A challenge for MLS Season Pass is that Hispanic streaming skews more to free and Android rather than to pay and Apple. And Dave, yep, you're 100% correct on that. In both of those areas. I mean, that's the other thing about MLS Season Pass, too. The challenge is that Hispanics are more likely to have Android phones. Hispanics also will not get Major League Soccer anymore on Univision or TUDN. So the only way that they can go ahead and watch those games in Spanish language is through MLS Season Pass. That's it. And that's another mountain to climb. Dave goes on to say, MLS outsourcing production to IMG is probably the right move, but must come with a meaningful margin hit. I would love to be a fly on the wall to know what $250 million gross becomes as net. Yeah, and I think in many ways, too, I think for this first season for Major League Soccer in 2023, I mean, it's $250 million from Apple, and who knows how much from Fox, probably not that much at all for the TV rights. They may break even. They may lose money the first year. They may take a hit or make it a little bit of money. And then you have to wonder about the transfer market then too. Okay, can you afford to buy some of these big players to bring them in? I think you need to. You really need to be. They need to take risks, just as they've taken risks with doing the deal with Apple. This is going to be a really, really interesting year in 2023. Probably the most interesting one from a soccer streaming perspective. And a lot of the other leagues, too, are looking closely at this Apple MLS deal, saying, hey, maybe this is the future. Maybe this is the way things are headed. Maybe this is the deal that makes the most amount of sense, especially knowing how much money Apple has. But maybe it's not. So we will talk about this in 2023. You can bet on that. Just a couple more things, too. Rick talks about American commentators. Rick says, I would like to hear TV announcers know the players on the field so that they could name the player on the ball. This should be their main job. Every 2 minutes or so, they can briefly discuss the game's tendencies. Talking too much is a problem, especially with American announcers. Most of what they say is easily seen by the TV viewers. And this goes back to kind of a discussion about kind of our thoughts about the initial lineup of MLS Season Pass announcers or commentators that they've announced thus far. I'm sure too more to be announced in the next week or two. Last but not least, Charlie wants to talk about SiriusXM. Charlie says, hi, guys. I really enjoyed the podcast. Due to busy schedules and travel, I often have found myself over the last few years listening to games on SiriusXM satellite radio. Is it me or are those commentators far more entertaining than television? Is it a function of having to be more sarcastic and mixing in humor for just audio? They cut away for goal calls on other games in the flow of play. They read tweets from the global audience, etc. I'd love to hear your thoughts. I often sync up Sirius with the television now.
Yeah, this is a growing trend. I've talked to many fans who do this, Charlie, and I've actually found when I'm traveling and listening to Sirius in my car, I'm getting, I think, more of a feel for the game. And then they cut to the other matches, as you said. I think the commentary is different, and maybe it's more structured and attuned to my personal preferences and that of others, maybe including you. So, yeah, this is a growing trend. As I said, I know people who are doing the same thing. They're listening to the TalkSport commentary or SiriusXM and syncing it up, muting Peacock or NBC, and just trying to sync it up with the television coverage. And if that means that they're a minute behind in the radio or 30 seconds behind, they sync it.
Yeah, I think this is the TalkSport commentators that do all the Premier League games. So you can go to the TalkSport website. And it's hard to find. It's not easy to find by any means. But within their website, you can listen to audio for each of those Premier League games that are happening. I've done the same thing as you, Kartik, when I've been traveling or in the car, listening to that radio commentary through TalkSport, actually, or through the TalkSport website, not through Sirius. And it's different. The one thing I don't like about it is that the commentators are not that good. So for the most part, the quality level of those commentators compared to television is... there's a big difference between the two. However, I do like the interactivity. I do like them reading out tweets, oftentimes from American soccer fans located in who knows what places throughout America. And it is a little bit more fun to listen to. But for me, I'd much prefer BBC Radio 5 Live for the radio commentary, or, of course, watching it on TV and listening to the commentators there. All right, listeners. We want you to have your say, so definitely let us know what feedback you have, what questions you have. We'd love to hear from you. There's a bunch of different ways you can reach out to us. You can go ahead and leave us a voicemail, and that is 561-247-4625. Or you can send us an email, which is web@worldsoccertalk.com. You can go to the worldsoccertalk.com website, click on podcast, and then leave a comment in the latest episode. You can reach us on Twitter at World Soccer Talk, or on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/World Soccer Talk. Kartik, where can listeners find you and Beyond the 90? On Substack?
Yeah, thanks. So KKFLA737 on Twitter, and and beyondthe90.net at Substack. Beyondthe90.substack.com is where you can find me there at the new site that I've launched with a couple of other writers. We offer free subscriptions and paid subscriptions. I'll be honest, a lot of the stuff is going to be free, particularly the stuff about U.S. soccer-related topics. The pay content is going to mostly be about Europe and transfers and match analysis, etc. So that's kind of there's a two-tier model there. So you can sign up for the free or the paid subscription.
All right, listeners, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate your time. And before we head out, Kartik, a big weekend. We've got the Bundesliga on Friday coming back after the winter break. We've got the Premier League Fan Fest in Orlando, which both you and I will be at. So look out for me there, wearing probably a World Soccer Talk polo shirt. And, of course, we've got leagues from around the world. Tons of soccer. We've got French Cup, Ligue 1, you name it, Kartik. What are you going to do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.